Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. My name is Kevin Acey, Potter's beat writer for the Union Tribune, Jay Posner, my boss at the Union Tribune. Jay, welcome me back. I'm back in San Diego. I'm in the office. It's like a museum in here. It's like a newspaper museum. I'm the only person. It's like, wow, there's piles of newspapers, and it's where people used to work before the pandemic.
I know it's so weird. I've gone in there a couple times to pick up things, and you kind of wonder, is this really where stuff used to happen? And we used to,
come every day.
I did. I came at least 5 days a week, and there's a stack of papers still on my desk, and
it's right over there.
Looking right at it. So it's give a wave. I would say water the plants, but there's no plants.
All
I'm,
right,
glad you're back. I'm glad you're back in town. It's a pretty good weekend to be in San Diego, Kevin.
It's a big weekend. They don't get bigger. And I'm not sure what that says about us, Jay. But it's been a while since they get bigger at Petco Park. Padres hosting the Dodgers for three. Tonight, Ryan Weathers against Walker Buehler. Tomorrow, Yu Darvish against Clayton Kershaw. And Sunday, Blake Snell against Trevor Bauer. This is going to be good. I don't know if he's pitching with one eye open or one eye shut, but whatever. It's going to be great. Jay, I have seen you on the social media, which you're a huge fan of the social media. I've seen you kind of playing this down. Kind of run through me here kind of the context that you would like to put this series in.
I think this series is extremely exciting. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think there's going to be great energy at the ballpark. I'm excited to get there for a couple games. The one thing that I don't want to say worries me, scares me, because that's overdoing it. But, you know, it's three baseball games out of 162. If the Padres win, and I'm going to say this ahead of time so that I can't be accused of making excuses for anybody or anything like that. If the Padres win all three games, or if the Padres lose all three games, or it's more likely something in the middle, I don't think that really says anything about either one of these teams that's going to be particularly relevant when we get into October, which is when we know that things are going to be decided. I don't think there's a big dispute that the Dodgers have a better team right now than the Padres do. The Dodgers have a better team than everyone does. As we saw in Pittsburgh, where the Padres lost a couple games and the sky was falling, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. So these are three games. I don't buy that it sets a tone for the 19 games ahead of time. The Dodgers are pitching their three best guys. But they also don't have Bellinger probably for the entire weekend. The Padres are pitching a rookie tonight who's never started a game and then throwing, you know, their two best guys the next 2 days. Fernando Tatis hasn't played in 10 days. We have no idea what he's going to be like when he's out there. We don't know what Will Myers is going to be like. They don't have Austin Nola. I just think it's a little bit farcical almost to put too much emphasis on these three games other than just enjoy them and hope for good baseball games. I'm just hoping that at least one of the three games finishes in under 4 hours.
Oh, you and me both, friend.
Preferably tonight's the 7:10 start.
Yeah, as if it matters with the early Friday deadline. It could take 2 hours. I'd still miss it.
How do you look? I'm sure you look at it a little bit differently than I do. But you've been around the team, although I guess you're not really around the team. You're just in the same structure as they are. But what sense do you get on this weekend?
That they believe... And maybe this is what's most important, though probably not, because it depends on when they meet a week from now in Los Angeles for four games. Right. But that they believe they can set a tone. All right. Now, they lose 2 of 3, they'll downplay that part. But that's how it is. That's how it is. And I think you're absolutely spot on. And I do think the reason I'm excited for it is there's going to be fans in the stands. The Padres are actually relevant. I didn't have to just ask guys in the days leading up to this, well, you know, is this a measuring stick? You know, are you guys getting closer to the Dodgers? Hey, those are still like relevant since that's the defending World Series champion that's won 8 in a row. But the Padres are a legitimate contender. And I think that should be exciting for everybody. But
I agree. And I think they're a legitimate contender no matter what happens this weekend. I mean, this is not, you know, they could get blown out in three straight games and they're still a legitimate contender. And the same thing, you know, if they blow out the Dodgers in three straight games, the Dodgers are still legitimate. So that's the only thing. I'm not denying in any way that this is exciting or that people shouldn't be excited about it. My only thing is I think there should be a little bit of perspective, which is, of course, all too rare in many circles these days.
Yeah, but we try to provide it. And listen, to me, and this brings us to our guest, an old friend of both of ours. I've spent a lot of time covering things with him. A fantastic guy. I don't just throw that word around either, because I never say that about you, Jay. But Sam Farmer from the Los Angeles Times wrote a story. And to me, it's really sort of the story right now in the early going or the early goings of the season. It's the rivalry and whether there is one and what there is to it. And man, I didn't realize Sam was going to spend like his entire life the last, other than the Masters, for the last couple months, because that's when I heard you were working on it. Sam, I read most of it as my plane landed this morning. First of all, welcome, Sam, to the Hot Lava Podcast. I know you've been waiting a long time to be on the Hot Lava Podcast.
I know. Well, that's a big day. It's a landmark day. I got it circled on my calendar. Thanks for that introduction. I too don't call you a great guy, Jay. So that's
I know it's good. It's good that you guys have something in common other than having spent way too many hours writing about football, a football team that no one right now cares about in either San Diego or Los Angeles. So
Sam and I spent way too many hours, and Sam far more than I came onto the scene. But we in 2016, we spent way too many hours out in front of NFL headquarters on Park Avenue in 20 degrees.
Trying to write on our, laptops perched on our knees. And
trying to hide in that bank office where they wouldn't let us hide.
That's right.
Oh, good times. Tell us, and everybody, it's on the LA Times website. It's on the Union Tribune website. Tell us, what was the thing as you kind of delved into this? Something that I kind of think that maybe you weren't as familiar with as you are now into this rivalry or the origins of it.
I guess the whole thing, if I were to break it down, was a vehicle to talk to Cameron Crowe.
Well done.
Jay feels me on that one.
Absolutely.
Any excuse, he's got Fast Times in the background there. I know he's got Almost Famous there as well. So, it could have been anything, but as long as I get to call Cameron Crowe and get his take on San Diego, I'd be happy. So, no, I mean, it was and you and I talked, Kevin, about this, and Jay and I talked about this because I was really a fish out of water writing about baseball. It's been many, many years since I've covered baseball as a fill-in guy. But this story in general wasn't really about baseball. Baseball was only the vehicle. It was really about the sort of strange and one-sided rivalry between San Diego and LA. And I feel a real affinity for San Diego. My brother lives in Carlsbad. My folks have lived in Del Mar for the last 35 years. So I love San Diego. And I was sort of enmeshed in that whole drama with the Chargers over the last 15 years before they moved to LA, the sort of tango and flirtation they had with LA. So I feel like I got to know San Diego quite a bit. I'll tell you, I really miss that trip down on the train, on the surf liner to Solana Beach. And even dating back to when the station was in Del Mar, I loved that.
You can still come down, Sam. I mean, we still have 18.
I know. And this gave me a reason to sort of focus my attention on San Diego. And it's just so rich with stories of the – but it's kind of this weird – and I've always felt this weird simultaneous inferiority and superiority complex that San Diego has about L.A., that – you're living in the shadow of LA. LA sort of gets things first. LA has all these sports teams and everything. And yet nobody in San Diego wants to be LA. Smelly. They can't stand it. And LA just sort of blithely goes along oblivious to this and says, I love San Diego. Little do they know, San Diego hates them. And so it was fun to sort of drill down on that a little bit. I talked to Nick Hardwick in the story where, he said it's a conundrum. And it was funny. I was just texting with Hardwick and I said, when else are you going to get to use conundrum in a story? But he said, it's a conundrum. We're not LA and the good things about LA, but we're not LA and the bad things about LA. So anyway, it was fun to do it and really neat to talk to Steve Garvey at length about being up in Ray Kroc's house on Matt Soledad. And
that was great.
Sort of the floor to ceiling windows and looking down south at that sort of Anchorman view of the San Diego skyline in 1982. And then looking north to North County and knowing that beyond that is Camp Pendleton and Orange County and LA. And how Ray Kroc in 1982 had these strange monitors on his desk, and he said, "These are personal computers, Stevie." And he's like, "Wow!" I mean, that's what blew his mind. And he said, "I'm monitoring sales in North America, and McDonald's sales in North America and Europe." And Garvey was like, "From your home? Could you possibly do that?" So it was just fun. I mean, it's great. I really enjoyed writing the story.
I love the part where you talk about San Diego and LA, and Bill Walton, who I'm sure it's always difficult to draw stuff out of Bill but as long as it takes to say, "Hi, Bill, how are you?"
Exactly.
An hour later. But I thought that it was interesting that he said, I think it was him that said, you just look at the weekends. And on Friday nights and Saturdays, especially, so many people just pouring down from LA to spend the weekend in San Diego, and Sunday night, obviously the opposite is true. And I've always felt, and I lived in both cities. I went to college in LA. I've lived here ever since. I've had family and friends in LA and covered countless events up there. And I've always had that same sense that you got across in the story that people in LA really like San Diego, and because it's different from what they have. I mean, they like to escape almost to come down here. And people in San Diego hate LA, and it's Kevin mentioned, it's sort of this one-sided rivalry. What else did Bill have to say about it? Cause he's kind of in the same position as I am a little bit, where he's lived here most of his life, but he did go to school, in LA. What else did he share with you?
Yeah. He talked about growing up and being a fan of the Padres even before they were a Major League Baseball team, and of the Chargers, the early Chargers, and riding his bike over from his house in La Mesa to the practice fields and sort of learning the art of rebounding by fielding fly or foul balls, and sort of getting in position. And he said the ushers were always nice to little Billy, the little red-haired kid with a flat top or whatever. I didn't realize he was such a huge Padres fan. We sort of texted back and forth about when we were going to talk, and he said, "Well, how much time do you need?" And I said, "Bill, I need you for like 5 minutes." So like an hour and a half later.
Right.
I mean, he was really, but he was just terrific, and his depth of knowledge on the topic, and you could tell he's truly a Padres fan and a San Diego fan, he's the whole thing. We got cleaner air, we got cleaner water, we got cleaner beaches. I was like, okay, dude, I get it. Okay, LA is a little like that. 10 years ago or something, there was a book that came out of "He's Just Not That Into You." LA is kind of like that. He doesn't realize that they're just not that into you, whether you're in Seattle and it's all this unrequited love, or we say the Bay Area. Oh man, San Francisco's awesome. What a great place. Really? They hate us. But he has that interesting perspective, having been an LA icon as one of key members of John Wooden's teams, and an appreciation for Los Angeles that he has, but true love for San Diego. And that's what I really found in Cameron Crowe too. And just how he said, the almost famous musical, when he had all these possible places where he could have opened the musical, it could have been in Boston or Dallas, or, But then he said, they said, or you can open it in San Diego. He's like, San Diego? We can open the musical in San Diego, like at the Old Globe Theater? Because he lived right across the street from the Old Globe. And he said his mom used to drag him to Shakespeare there. And he said it was like 4 hours of Shakespeare. And he'd be like, oh, mom. But then when it came around, he's like, oh, man, I used to watch Shakespeare at the Old Globe. You know, suddenly it became a point of pride. But he said when, and this is in the story, and Kevin, when you finally get around to finishing the story.
Well, you're ruining it for me.
But yes. Condo complex that's right in the like left center field overlooking Petco. Well, that's where they put him up for the debut of the Almost Famous musical. And he said he was really nervous coming down from LA and nervous about doing a face plant in his hometown with this musical and everything. And he said he got off the freeway in San Diego and he said, I felt that warm feeling come over me and that San Diego vibe. And he said it was just all, everything was right in the world. And they put him up in that place. And he said he looked out the window and you could actually see the field and the Padres were playing the Dodgers. And he's like, I felt like I'm home. This is where I need to be. So I thought, well, that's awesome. And I'm glad I called him on that because again, this was all a vehicle to talk to Cameron Crowe.
And that's a great way to end.
I know, Jay, you would be in the exact same position because you love Cameron Crowe.
Absolutely. And I was lucky enough to see the musical, you know, when it debuted. And I told Sam the story when we talked that Cameron was actually just out in front of the theater before it started. And my wife and I were there and like, wait, is that Cameron Crowe right there? And he was just going around talking to people, thanking people for coming, taking pictures with them. I have a great picture of my wife with him. And
would it be helpful for the folks watching this to know who Cameron Crowe is if they don't? Can you tell us who Cameron Crowe is? I mean, if they don't know, I mean, I'm sure there's people out there who are like.
Right. Famed screenwriter. And he wrote Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which, of course, is based from his time as an undercover student at Claremont High here in San Diego, and he's done many other movies, including Almost Famous, and then he developed
Aaron McGuire,
right, and I think Singles, and then developed a musical based on Almost Famous, which debuted at the Old Globe in the year before all the pandemic started, and. So it was. I know for anybody who's a fan of his work, it's great. Like you got to talk to him a lot more than I did. But even just meeting him, he seemed very genuine and very much like you would hope that someone that would be.
He didn't disappoint.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
One of the things that he said that I thought was really interesting. Obviously, music is such a big part of his movies and the sort of iconic songs in Fast Times or in Almost Famous for sure. Mm-hmm. The soundtrack is a big deal, but I started my career, my first full-time job was a sports writer in Seattle, two small papers up there, Bellevue, Washington and Kent, Washington. But when I moved to Seattle, they just finished filming Singles, which is a great movie and probably underappreciated. So funny. But it was right at sort of the leading edge of the grunge craze. And I used to drive by that apartment, Singles apartment complex all the time, which they had sort of modified by putting a fountain there. But the whole thing is based on Singles. And I know this is what you wanted to talk about on the podcast. But he said that apartment that was central was actually Eddie Vedder's apartment. Eddie Vedder's in the Singles, as you know. Mm-hmm. I thought that was kind of cool that they filmed a lot of it in his old apartment where he lived. So
another San Diegan.
So. And what Sam doesn't know is how important the Vedder Cup is to a lot of Padres fans. I mean, the rivalry between the Padres and the Mariners, Sam, you have no idea. Yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. We try to manufacture rivalries out of anything. It's like changing uniforms, which you also talk about in the in the story. Uh-huh. I didn't get that far. I apologize. I was flying this morning. I think this has been fantastic discussion because whether a lot of people know it or not, I think like the hatred of LA is at the heart of your hatred for the Dodgers, or they're like they're intertwined. I mean, it's you know, and
for sure.
If it were vice versa, if the feeling were mutual, it would also be, you know, your hatred of our beaches and our perfect air and everything. That's what you wouldn't like about us. But
and the fact that the Padres, now that the Chargers are gone, the Padres, San Diego is the only city that only has a major league baseball team. So mm-hmm. all the other major league cities have at least an NBA team, an NFL team, a hockey team. San Diego is the only city with one team. And so that's the one club, the one cudgel it can beat over the head of LA. So that only adds to sort of the import of this. And people feel it really strongly. So
I think, Jay, that like, I mean, because we wondered, oh, are Chargers fans going to go over to the Padres? And I couldn't tell you exactly how much that's happened. But I do believe the Padres have become more important to San Diego since the Chargers left, without a doubt.
Well, I think that's true, but I think it took the Padres getting really good, though. I don't think people were just sort of the casual fan was not going to be interested in the Padres if they were going to lose 95 games every year. But
that's
by the Padres, you know, investing money the last couple of years and obviously getting really good now, I think they have a chance to catch that casual fan. I mean, my feeling is this has always been a football town. It's going to take a lot to change that, but I think there's great excitement here for the Padres when they're good, like they are at this point. And I do think that Dodger fans, from as best I can tell, have paid more attention now to the Padres in these last couple of years. And I do think these games are more meaningful. And look, the Dodgers and the Giants is a rivalry that dates back for, you know, decades and across the country and everything. The Padres are not going to be able to get to a point where it's going to be that sort of long-standing hatred. But in the short term, I think Dodger fans certainly are paying more attention now to the Padres than they are to the Giants. Although the Giants are off to a good start, I don't think most of us expect that to last. But I do think that's part of what goes into this, especially these next 10 days where you've got 7 games in 10 days. And then as the season goes on and then what we, you know, would expect and hope to be another meeting in October, hopefully with both teams healthy and everybody gets their best shot. And it's not just a one-year thing either. I mean, the Padres are built to be good for a few years, and the Dodgers have been good for almost a decade now and don't show any signs of letting up. So I think that just sort of adds to it in that sense. Do you have that sense, Sam, in LA?
I do. And I also think there's another element that we really haven't talked about, and that's the experience for the fans and going to Petco Park versus going to Dodger Stadium and the vibe at Petco Park and sort of the creature comforts of that cool ballpark, which LA, you know, Dodger Stadium is iconic and there's so much history there and it's a cool location and everything, but it's definitely older. It's definitely a different vibe. And I think with the way that LA fans tend to populate Petco Park when the Dodgers play there. Maybe not this year, but there's an appreciation of what could be and that sort of the vibe that guys got from the Dodgers maybe in the 70s and 80s and what it was like to bring your family to a game, et cetera. And LA is lacking that to some extent, but they still have the, you know, Dodger DNA in the Seidlers. To some degree, with a twist, obviously. But I think something else you brought up was really interesting, and that is, in talking about the Southern California DNA, people aren't going to support a team that's not entertaining, is not competitive, is not good. It's not like you're in Cleveland and it's what you get, what you get, and you don't complain. people are going to find other things to do. So the Padres had to be compelling to capture that Chargers fan base. And I think they've effectively done that, maybe even better than people expected.
Yeah, I think the only thing that was a little disappointing was nobody could foresee that. I don't think that the Chargers were just going to, you know, leave at that very moment, that the Padres couldn't see that a few years earlier and sort of, boy, when they leave, we're going to be good right away. It's taken a couple of years to get to that. But I definitely think that the Padres have a huge opportunity here.
Were they supposed to make Fernando Tatis Jr. older quicker or what?
Well, I mean, obviously, but, you know, the rebuild that they planned in 2015 or whatever, you know, it would have been better, of course, if it could have been hurried along. But I think the fact that it's here now is the Padres taking advantage of that opportunity that the Chargers presented them, basically, by leaving and going to a place where, you know, they're so welcome and everybody can't wait, I know, for the season to start.
Yeah, I want to give credit to Kevin, too, because really I was thinking about – I had to mine him for all types of information about sort of the feelings of San Diego and about the Padres and what made the Padres different, what set them apart. And he really came up with the concept, which I think had some that I was happy with. You know, I was saying Dodgers are like IBM, and I thought sort of beachside burger stand. I don't know what the Padres are. And he said the Padres are like a startup. And I thought, you know, that's really good. I'm going to steal that, and I won't credit you. And so now that
we're a team.
And, you know, I mean, that would be out in the atmosphere if anybody watched this podcast. So I'm glad.
Well,
among friends, right? I mean,
we're gonna have record numbers now that we have a big time sports writer from a big time paper in a big time city on board. I mean, it's not your neighborhood show anymore.
Yeah,
you guys love me just like you love LA. I'm sure.
Well, you know, we couldn't get Plaschke, so you know.
I'm a pinch hitter.
We'll carry on with the theme. Bill's like, wait, Bill is. We'll try for Bill when the games get really important later on. We'll see if we can get Bill there.
I'm the April guest.
Exactly.
Wait till
exactly.
September.
No one's going to remember April, Sam. You don't know baseball, but it's just like we're basically just out of spring training right now, Sammy.
So, guys, this is a dress rehearsal. We're cutting this part out.
Well, I mean, we've been done for 10 minutes. I do think that it was important. Hey, speaking again, and to San Diego fans, at least a certain segment, they loved the idea that, at least in our minds, that the Padres stole the show from the Dodgers. You know, the Dodgers won the fake World Series in the 60 game, right? And then the Padres went out and had this great offseason. And Padres fans are really reveling in that. Like, hey, we stole the show from these guys, that fake World Series now, you know. And then, hey, look, in conclusion, what it's going to take for it to really be a rivalry is for the Padres to actually win a season series and maybe win a World Series. That's what it's going to take. Because it's been like 9 years since they even went 6-5 against these guys or whatever it is. So,
more than win a season series. You got to win a World Series.
Well, you have to win a World Series.
The Padres are 1-8 in World Series games. They need to win a World Series.
Oh, thanks, Sam.
And they need to just get to a World Series
or whatever, and then it'll be on.
How about getting to a World Series? And not to have that San Diego mentality of, you know, poor us, but how about getting to a World Series when the two greatest teams in a 25-year span, the 84 Tigers and the 98 Yankees, aren't there? That might be nice, too.
I'll tell you one little thing. I was it was this Israel trip and with these Hall of Famers, and it was a dinner where I was sitting next to Roger Staubach, and Joe Montana was at another table. Joe Montana gets up to talk and says, you know, gives a toast at this dinner. And Roger Staubach leans over and he said, did they play the Cincinnati Bengals in the Super Bowl? I said, yeah, actually they did twice. And he said, they should try the Pittsburgh Steelers on for size.
See?
So that's what, you know, like you said, I mean, they had some pretty tough competition there.
Well, I got to tell you that, Sam, this was just like I remember hanging out with you in a press box or a Manhattan street corner. Mm-hmm. Sam Farmer, and Jay, you'll back me up on this, is a treasure trove of stories. It is always fantastic to talk to you, man. We really, really appreciate it. And I hope this inspired you to maybe watch some baseball or you know, maybe for get sure. out to the ballpark again, you know?
All right. And this podcast, I mean, you get tremendous guests. I'll never figure out how you're getting this quality of guests.
What we do is we have guests who talk about really good guests. I mean, Fawn Hutchinson, Cameron Crowe, and Bill Walton were on here. And Ray Kroc, too.
And we ended with Roger Staubach and Joe Montana.
There you go.
Let's put that in a tease today.
So, I know. Sam, thanks very much, Sam. This was great. Yeah, we really do appreciate you
anytime.
Joining us. And it was great.
Thanks for your help and story.
Yeah,
I really appreciate that.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much. Dodgers Potters this weekend. We'll talk to you later.